Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I use the Complete Idiot's Guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified. I've always felt that way.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior higher.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Welcome in to Wretched Radio. Nope, I am not Todd Friel. I'm Jimmy Hicks in the studio for Todd Friel today, who's actually having a conversation with one of our Fortis Institute fellows, Dr. Andrew Walker. And we're going to jump right in to that conversation right now.
You've got a list. Check it twice. Which moral Brave New World issue is at the top of the list of your concerns for what you're seeing in society? There's a panoply of Brave New World issues. You've got gender business, marriage, IVF. You have new philosophical ideas that are now seizing the culture's attention and affirmation. And we're looking at it and going, what is happening here? It's a Brave New World. Which of the issues is most concerning to you? Joining us in studio to discuss Christian ethics, he's from Southern Seminary, written for the New York Times. Well, hootie hoo. That's a big deal. Well done with that. And you've written for a gazillion other very respectable outlets, a number of books, and you are a Christian ethics professor at Southern Sem. So I'm going to ask you the exact same question. On the list of all of your ethical concerns that you're seeing in our Brave New World, what's number one?
Not to... This isn't as provocative and appealing as some of the issues. I think it is the state of the family in the American West. We should say the West broadly, but particularly in America. When we think about family, we tend to think about our own family and we don't zero out to think about kind of how is the state of the American family more broadly. And when you look at what the sociologists are saying, the family is in a horrible spot in American culture. I can't cite all the particular statistics, but here are a few trends that we've noticed. The marriage rate, as far as how many people in the population are marrying, is as low as the rate has ever been since marriage rates have been recorded.
Don't lose sight of your statistics.
Okay.
But people will hear something like that and say, well, so what? So what? The people don't get married.
Yeah. So the reason that this matters is because men are men and women are women. The design of our bodies indicates that even if you don't marry, you're oriented to marry because of how our bodies are made, which means marriage is something that's tied to human nature. And if we're not marrying, we're going to be misfiring on the foundations and pillars of
society. And the orderliness of it that it brings. Otherwise, you've got all of these autonomous people running around in every direction.
Exactly. And what we've noticed, so I used to work at the Heritage Foundation, a non-Christian conservative think tank, and we had the data. And the data indicated that the number one predictor of childhood poverty in America is whether the child grew up in a married household.
Right.
And so, you know, we live in this moment where it's like everyone wants to champion justice and social justice and change the world, which is great. Yeah, I want to champion justice as well. But the best thing as far as enacting a system of justice to where everyone has the best chance to succeed in life is making sure that human beings are brought up in the context where they can be properly reared, properly educated, properly...
Is that true for pagans too?
Yes, absolutely.
Or why?
Because pagans are males and females too.
Okay, keep going. Yeah. Theologian, why?
Because Genesis chapter 1 is pivotal here. Genesis chapter 1 is giving us this broad panoramic understanding of creation order that every person finds themselves bound to play within the boundaries of, regardless of whether they are Christians or not. Non-Western civilizations have all anchored themselves in marriage. Yeah. So this is not necessarily... we have the Christian argument that we want to make the Christian argument for, but there are a lot of historic sociologists have argued that
it works because that's what God has baked in.
Yeah, absolutely.
To humanity for orderly function.
So a part of what it means to be male and female is to possess a sexual drive that will want to move you into unity with your complementary other. Okay, well, something can happen in that act that the Bible refers to as becoming one flesh. What can happen is babies. And by the way, sometimes I feel like we're having like the birds and the bees talk, right?
Right, but
that's where we are. So 9 months later, after that physical act occurs, something can come about. Babies, okay? That raises a question. A baby is here and present with us. Who's going to take care of that baby? Who in society is going to provide some type of instruction manual for how that child is to be taken care of, so that the child can prosper, but then also so that the child doesn't become a burden on others in the society? And so this is why political philosophers, not just theologians, have argued that you have to have the family as the cornerstone of society if you want to have a population that is literate, that isn't incarcerated, that knows how to self-govern. I mean, this is the whole notion of ordered liberty that the founders of America had in view. It was informed by kind of this Christian natural law perspective that there has to be these institutions in society that help form individuals into the types of persons that they're meant to be, moral and virtuous. And the family has been regarded as, like, I think, the primary instrument to accomplish that.
Okay, you tell me if you agree or disagree with this, but babies, I think, disprove evolution.
Say more.
They're a drain on the family budget. They're competitors for stuff and food.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have babies if we evolved from goo. All right, I want to keep going with this idea that God has baked the world with particular ingredients that function well, even if you don't acknowledge him as God. That perhaps sounds a little bit provocative, but it falls underneath the banner of an ethical term called natural law. First of all, you got to define it. Just give me a sentence. What's natural law?
So natural law has two big horizons. The first horizon is the fact that we believe God has created a moral order. In creating the universe that he has, there is a moral order to it. Then secondly, it refers to our ability to comprehend and grasp that moral order. So that refers to the existence or the ontology of moral order and our awareness or our epistemology of it.
Okay. So, but that, and that even goes that second category, not just for believers.
Yeah.
Humans.
Correct.
So you're saying humans, even though our brains are busted, thanks to the fall.
Yes.
That we can still kind of, what would be some instances of natural law that we'd all agree on?
So when the news broke that Hamas had put babies in ovens, everyone has a natural revulsion to that. You don't have to have prolonged conversations and ethical syllogisms to really prove the case that it's wrong to put babies in ovens. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of just automatically, innately understands you don't do that. You don't murder innocent.
So are we talking about the realm of the conscience?
Absolutely. Yeah. So this is the language Paul uses in Romans chapter 2. There's a law written on the heart. There's a deposit of morality that every human being has that our conscience bears witness to. You think of our conscience as the cognitive faculties that make us aware of this law written on the heart.
And it's stuff that we don't need to read a textbook for. You're born with it. And some people, they're better than others, but nevertheless, when it comes to conscience issues. But this is what God has woven into the fabric of the DNA of the human.
Yeah, and we have to have some doctrine of natural law in our understanding of public theology, because, you know, this might shock you and me in saying this, but not everyone's a Christian. So we have to figure out how to reason together in the public square. So it means we're going to have to figure out how to come to moral conclusions with individuals that don't agree with us.
You know, and that's why it's a challenge. I don't know if you would grade it as the greatest challenge in human history, but thanks to postmodernism, thanks to moral relativism, people's ability to skirt around natural law issues that we used to agree on. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, boy is a boy, a girl is, you know, kind of used to be. Now it's, so is it, in your opinion, getting harder to use natural law?
No, actually, I think right now we're in the middle of a little bit of a natural law revolution, because we're noticing even some non-Christians who are getting really, quite frankly, freaked out with how far society is trying to go in evading the natural law. So these individuals may not be able to explain or account for their moral concerns, but they're identifying the moral concerns themselves. I'll just say this real quick. Some of the greatest skeptics of the transgender movement, particularly in Britain, are not evangelical Christians. They're secularists, they're feminists, they're lesbians, because they recognize, wow, the transgender phenomenon calls into question other basic categories that we all rely on, even as secularists.
Right. Yeah, but without digressing, that's why we can't define what a woman is anymore. Because if you start defining woman and connect it to biological reality, the whole house of cards comes crumbling down.
Back with more from Todd and Dr. Andrew Walker next on Wretched Radio. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know the feeling. Every morning you wake up and you wonder, how am I going to navigate this weird, crazy, upside down world with biblical wisdom? And that's exactly why Fortis Institute exists. We're your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. When you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just giving money, you're discipling young men struggling with pornography. You're equipping pastors in small rural churches. You're preaching the gospel to students who desperately need to hear it. Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
The hat tip to Masters University. You want to send your kids someplace where they actually still teach the Bible? Not just based on a document that they maybe have in a file cabinet someplace, but they actually use the Bible there. The education at the Masters University, not only biblical, but oh so practical. I encourage you to visit masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it? If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now, absolutely free at FortisPlus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Every night at 8 o'clock, the battle begins. Who gets the remote? What are we watching? How many cooking shows is too many cooking shows? Well, I've got news that'll bring peace to your living room. Fortis Plus just landed on your TV. Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, even that smart TV you bought last year, and you still can't program. No subscription, no credit card. Download Fortis Plus on your TV right now. Finally, something the whole family can agree on. Hey, can I be honest with you for a second? I see a lot of guys just drifting. Just going through the motions, working, hanging out, maybe going to church, but not really sure what they're supposed to be doing with their lives. And here's what's crazy. Nobody's giving you real answers. Dr. Adam Tyson has hosted a Fortis Forum, 5 Steps to Becoming a Man After God's Own Heart. And it is not what you think. It's on Fortis Plus. You can watch it whenever you want. Just go check it out right now. Just download Fortis Plus wherever you download your apps or go to FortisPlus.org. Let me ask you something. How much time did you spend on your phone yesterday? Don't answer that out loud. Probably pretty embarrassing for the both of us. But here's the thing. You're going to be on that thing anyway, right? So why not use some of that time for something that actually matters? The Fortis Plus app. It is packed with content that'll change how you think, how you lead, and how you live. And get this. It's all free. Download Fortis Plus right now. It's free. It's powerful. And it's time to take back your screen time and use it for the kingdom. Fortis Plus at FortisPlus.org.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. The first name given to God is Elohim in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Elohim is a plural noun, but the verb created is singular. God is plural in personhood, but singular in being. The Creator God is the Triune Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And we are back here on Wretched Radio today. I'm Jimmy Hicks in the studio for Todd Friel, who's actually having a conversation with one of our Fortas Institute fellows, Dr. Andrew Walker.
So natural law, basically, we have a general sense of morality.
Yeah.
I shouldn't hit you in the nose. We all typically get that.
Yeah.
But other natural law things, we were talking about marriage.
Yeah.
We were talking about things like, if you educate a child, they do better in general.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got two parents, kids stay out of prison in general.
Yeah.
Because those are just natural law things that God has cooked into the culture. Now, I want to share with you my term for this, and you tell me if this is right. I sure hope you do, because I've been using it for years. God's metaphysical spiritual laws.
Sure, I like that. I mean, you could also...
Works?
Yeah, that works. Right. I think you could call this God's preserving grace. It's a form of common grace. So you can think of moral law as it's something that was given by God, and it's meant to basically provide some parameters for us to operate within society on the basis of, to keep us from going completely off the rails. Now, here's what's interesting. We're living in a moment right now where we seem to be going off the rails, but at the same time we're doing that, we're also having some whiplash back, suggesting that some people are waking up.
I think so too, because if we had talked about this, say, a year ago, I think my question about can you reason with the unreasonable and with feet firmly planted in midair upside down, but I agree with you. I think of Joe Rogan.
Yes.
Something's going on.
Jordan Peterson.
Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
That are recognizing, wait a second, this is not a worldview that works.
Right. One of the most incredible articles I've ever read was an article written in 2014 by the British intellectual Douglas Murray. And he's an atheist. And he says, you know, can human dignity survive a post-Christian civilization? Mm. And he says that really atheists have three options. They can finally work out an atheist doctrine of human dignity. We can acknowledge that we can't actually have a doctrine of human dignity. Or third, he says, we can acknowledge this is really just the legacy that we receive from Christianity, and maybe we should reconsider the value of Christianity in our civilization.
Wow.
And he says this out loud.
Not to that degree, not with that clarity, but I get hints of that too from Richard Dawkins, where he's starting to go, you know, and it's like, in light of Islam as the alternative,
right,
as the predominant religious influence, he's very clear. Islam is not a good religion for human flourishing. Christianity has been. Doesn't mean he's born again,
right?
But it's something.
But he's picking up on the moral norms of Christianity.
That's right. Because again, natural law,
and
it's Christianity that actually explains
absolutely.
That. This idea of natural law, that we share commonalities in morals and values and virtues, it's nice that it can kind of build a bridge with an unbeliever. Hey, we all agree that beating up small children is bad. Look, we got something in common here. But how might we use natural law to persuade people of the rightness of Christianity and maybe even use it as a tool of conviction to bring about the knowledge of sin that they might run to the cross?
I love that question. Because you're getting at the fact that I think that this conversation should point people towards the gospel. In Romans chapter 1, Paul's argument is that the pagans, the Gentiles, the non-Christians can look at creation order and perceive God's existence in the things that have been made. Their conscience tells them there is something out there that has created the world that they're living in. But then Paul's argument goes further. He says that they are without excuse, meaning that every human being has some moral knowledge. They know it. And so they are without excuse for having known that they're violating the moral law. Okay, it is that violation of the moral law that we would say makes someone a lawbreaker. It means someone deserves hell because they've broken God's holy law. Okay, well, the solution to that, we know, is not just more natural law. The solution is Christ's atoning sacrifice, the fact that he, in his perfect sacrificial death, fulfilled the moral law perfectly. So as we're thinking about the fact that when people sin, when people break the moral law, they're not just violating an abstract law. They're violating a law given by a lawgiver. And we all know that one of the ways we come to Christ is through an awareness of our sinfulness, an awareness of our shame.
That's the only path. Now,
right.
Using the law in evangelism, big fan, opening up the law to bring about the knowledge of sin, to help people realize, yikes, I'm in hot water here. So by asking questions about their track record of morality, to help them realize, there could be some ramifications for this. Okay.
Yeah.
How might we do that with natural law? Because we're really talking about the same issue here.
Yeah.
But rather than, you know, have you kept the first commandment? Have you kept the seventh commandment?
Yeah.
How might we be able to say, here's some natural laws.
Yeah.
You've broken them. You're accountable.
I would say, have you ever stolen something? Have you ever lied? Then you violated the natural law. And I actually don't have to convince you that you know that lying is wrong. You know that lying is wrong, but there's the reality that you have some inbuilt moral standard already that is convincing you that you have done wrong. It's a question then, what do you do in response to having done that wrong? And the message of Christianity is no amount of striving with our perfect obedience to the law is going to make us right with God. It requires a supernatural act of grace to capture our hearts, to make us alive in Christ and to make us reconciled to God through Christ.
Yeah, I try sometimes to explain to people that the earthly reality has a heavenly origin.
Yes.
That there's a string connected between here and there, and that we really are a mirrored reflection of the character and the nature of God. And so you would agree, my unbelieving friend, that courts and police and jails are good things.
Right.
Why? Well, that's because these things have been established by the one who is the moral lawgiver, who has judgment as the foundation of his throne and has a place for lawbreakers to try to help them connect the dots in a bigger sense rather than just condemning them with some hellfire preaching.
Yeah, I mean, this is really why when we think about natural law, we have to think about this in the form of cosmic justice as well.
Right.
I think one of the most important moral events of the 20th century were the Nuremberg trials, where the nations came together to try the Nazi perpetrators.
Right.
If you go and read the opening statement from Justice Robert Jackson, the lead persecutor, I don't believe he was a Christian, but he's speaking in the categories of natural law because he's saying the reason that we're here trying the Nazis is because cosmic justice requires that these awful individuals answer for their crimes.
Right.
The beauty of Christianity in this particular setting is we actually can explain all the full range and contours of why there is a moral law, why you think those individuals are wrong, why you think that they're deserving of judgment.
Right. Yeah, that the Nuremberg trials too, huge statement on anthropology and human beings, because if evolution is correct, what happens to any human is, well, probably a good thing, actually. Why is it so important that we understand anthropology?
All of the major issues in society today that I think are tearing at the very fabric of society are anthropological in nature. What does it mean to be a human being? Do human beings have a right to life? What is a man? What is a woman? What is marriage? What is family? Issues pertaining to even euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide, issues like race and ethnicity, all of those issues
IVF,
all of these trace back to us needing to have a proper doctrine of humanity grounded in that Genesis 1 worldview.
It has to be because, and that's a battleground for creation, that if the evolutionary view is correct, human beings, same level as a sea slug.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a very well-known Jewish intellectual named Yuval Harari, and about 8 years ago, he gave a TED Talk, and he said kind of the atheist dark secrets out loud. And he said, if you really cut someone open, human rights don't fall out. basically just organs and guts fall out. He said that human rights are basically just nice stories, things we tell ourselves to make us feel warm and fuzzy on the inside, but human rights don't really exist. He said that out loud. And that's one of those moments where kind of the secularist or the atheist ends up becoming the Christian apologist,
right?
Because they make my job easier.
Anthropology, we've got to use our information system, aka the Bible, to show that people aren't sea slime. We didn't crawl out of the ooze. We're just better than the animals. The desire to descend man, to bring us down to that same level, they have to do that with an evolutionary worldview. Otherwise, it just makes Christianity look so right because it is.
And that is Todd talking today with Fortis Institute Fellow Dr. Andrew Walker. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.